there's one thing I know about my time on this earth. Never rub another man's rhubarb.
That's right, we're talking about the Clown Prince of Crime because your geek history lesson on the Joker is now in session.
Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason, the Rhubarb King Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to Your Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or villain from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. And today we thought we'd take on one of the more obscure members of the Batman Rogues Gallery.
I don't think many people know about this Batman villain. I think he certainly doesn't get talked about. He definitely is not as on as many t-shirts as he needs to be. And I really think more people should cosplay as him at comic conventions.
Oh, the shade.
Hashtag sarcasm. Of course, we are talking about Joker, the Clown Prince of Crime. If you remember to our last week's episode, the top five Batman villains, our excellent guest, Sal Crivelli from Comic Pop, we decided that Joker was the greatest Batman villain of all time. So I thought, hey, let's talk about a main lesson of the Joker. We're, of course, doing this because there's a little tiny movie coming out called Joker, pretty aptly named, starring the old Joaquin Phoenix from Gladiator and Signs.
Only Gladiator. He's only ever been in Gladiator.
As the Joker. And, you know, that movie is going to come out and it's either going to be the biggest hit in the world or the biggest flop in the world. Hello, future people. But you tell us later about the box office results.
Which, to be fair, can be said about literally every movie.
Well, yes, exactly. At the time of this recording,
we haven't seen it.
The movie has not come out. Yeah. We have not seen it, so we're not going to talk about it. There will be no spoilers for the Joker movie. Although, I think you can guess that he's going to become a clown. And he probably, maybe, might kill some people.
Live in Gotham?
We have a lot of people that have recommended the Joker episode. So we have some TAs here. Ashley, if they want to suggest a future lesson of Geek History Lesson, where can they do that?
You can do that on our socials. You can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at GHL Podcast. If you really feel like it, you can email us at geekhistorylesson@gmail.com.
That's right. The people that have suggested the Joker are Fernandolian316, Alexander Ebert, Dancing Nerd King, Alexis N. Bowen, Hannah Aubrey, Michael Profile, Kate Minturn, and Carlos Sanchez. I want to thank all of you for getting the opportunity for me to mispronounce your name.
You're welcome.
But thank you for suggesting the Joker. Okay, so let's go into the first section of the podcast, the 10 cent origin. Ashley, what is the 10 cent origin?
The 10 cent origin is the part of the podcast where Professor Jason is going to lay out all the who's its and what's its and what you need to know about the Joker in case you go to a great Gotham themed cocktail party and someone doesn't know who he is.
Well, hopefully, as we know from the great cinema classic Batman and Robin, if you go to a cocktail party in Gotham, there will be people dressed up as monkeys on vines.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's in the movie.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Have you never seen Batman and Robin?
No. I've never seen any of the Schumacher Batmans. We've talked about this multiple
times. Do we need to know a Batman and Robin retrospective?
I do not think so.
I will be quite honest with you. The last time I tried to watch that movie was about 8 or 9 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I made it 20 minutes in until I shut it off.
I think I've said this on this podcast. If not, I've said it on other podcasts. The only thing I know about the Schumacher Batmans are the glass cups from McDonald's.
Oh, that's from Batman Forever.
Sure.
Because
the McDonald's ones with like Mr. Freeze on them.
And Batman Returns.
And there was a Robin one. It was so cool.
In Batman Returns, they were just like regular plastic kind of big gulp cups.
Oh, no, not those ones.
I had them all. We're getting a little bit ahead of our merchandise spotlight because this episode, by the way, listeners, we've heard your requests. We've heard your emails. Yes, we've heard your emails.
I only read emails out loud.
We're going to try to start doing an action figure or merchandise spotlight every episode.
Regularly.
So get ready. Okay, 10 cent origin, Cliff Notes version of
the character.
But I really think you should email us at geekhistorylesson@gmail.com if you want us to do a retrospective of every Batman
movie. If you have any of those cups and you want to send them to us, we'll send you a gift back.
All right, let's get into the episode here.
Let's do it.
The Joker has been known by many aliases, a.k.a. the Red Hood, Jack Napier, Clown Prince of Crime, the Harlequin Harlequin of Hate, Puddin, Mr. J, and Melvin White. He is, of course, a DC Comics character, a supervillain to be specifically. He was created by Bill Finger, Bob Kane, and Jerry Robinson. His first appearance was in Batman number one in April 25th. Of 1940.
He old.
His team affiliations, and all of these are loose affiliations. Of course, he partners with Harley Quinn. He is, of course, a member of the Batman's Rogues Gallery. He is a member of the Injustice League, the Injustice Gang, and he is sort of part of this group. You could consider him part of the Three Jokers. We don't know because that comic series has not come out yet. His abilities are criminal mastermind. He's an expert chemist, which is something that many people forget. And he has many joke props, toxins, and insanity.
Can we do a villain sidebar?
Okay.
Because you talk about the him being a chemist.
Yes.
Which is a very early golden silver age kind of thing.
Except when Chuck Dixon did an amazing storyline about it in the 90s.
Of course he did. Because the 90s Chuck Dixon is paramount. But I think a lot of those traits were sort of co-opted by the Scarecrow. Because Scarecrow obviously deals with the fear of toxins. And the Joker's become more and more gag-based since
then.
Well,
you have to think about it because it all comes from the Joker venom that he sprays on people and gives everybody the rictus grin. So how would he be able to do that unless he's a chemist, right?
Yeah. And to be that precise, you would have to be quite good at it. But I like that in comic book universes, being a criminal mastermind is a superpower.
That's right. He has been portrayed in live action as at the time of this recording by Cesar Romero, Mark Hamill, of course, only in the live action. Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, Jared Leto, and Joaquin Phoenix. We are missing some people on there because there have been many, many numerous Joker voices.
Yes, we're sort of doing our best of.
Yes. Ashley, let's get to the Meet Cute.
Yes, the Meet Cute is the second part of the podcast where we tell you the first time we meeted a character and how cute it was.
Ashley, where did you first meet the Joker?
So my first exposure to a lot of Batman characters was actually the Batman 66 show, because that was on in syndicated reruns before Batman the Animated Series. So I first met the Cesar Romero Joker, and I have a very distinct memory of standing in my basement being 4 or 5 years old, and the Joker had Batman and Robin strapped down to a conveyor belt. And that's the first time that I remember being cognizant of who he was as a character. And I don't know why it's imprinted on me so hard. I'm sure he was the scariest thing I'd seen up to that point in my short
Will
life.
Will Batman and Robin escape the conveyor belt of death? Tune in next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
I was really
bat
worried.
Friends.
I was worried about Robin.
Do you like Cesar Romero, Joker?
Joko? I like
that's what I call it. Yeah, the 60s Joker is Joko.
Joko. I like that he refused to shave his mustache.
Yes.
I actually think Cesar Romero's Joker is pretty great.
He's not bad.
And I think for the time, he's easily one of the best villains on the show. I think it's between him and Catwoman, personally, for my tastes.
But
maybe that's a discussion for a different time.
Ooh, that would be a great discussion.
Episode.
Who is the best Batman? Who's the best villain represented on Batman 66?
Yeah.
I think it's the Riddler.
I do like Cesar Romero's version.
Cool.
Jason, what is your meet cute for Mr. J?
Okay, the Joker is very interesting to me. I kind of feel that I always knew who he was. The first piece of Joker media that I can remember consuming is, of course, Batman 1989, which I saw in theaters as part of my birthday celebration.
That's so cute.
My birthday is in, I'll just say it, it's June 3rd. And that movie came out very close to my birthday. So
10 birthday cards.
Yeah. So I was able to, it was that movie. I'm not certain the exact date that Batman 1989 released, but I got to go see it as part of my birthday celebration.
I love that for you. That's a great piece of Jason Inman mythology.
Yep, I had a poster from Batman 89 on my wall when I was a kid. It's the one where he's standing next to his Batmobile. And I had that on my wall for, almost 10 years.
I want to say that you should find a picture of it and we should share it. But that might take some doing.
Especially in the middle of the episode now.
June 19th, 1989.
Okay, so this was a little bit of a delay because mine's June 3rd. But I got to go see that movie as part of my birthday celebration.
There you go.
So it was very nice. Thanks to my mom, who has been a guest on this podcast.
Who taught a lesson on this podcast. Yep.
All right, let's get into the History 101.
The main meat of the lesson, where Professor Jason is going to tell you literally everything you need to know about the Joker.
Okay, I want to get this out of the way. Right now.
Okay.
There is a current construct idea about the Joker. It was introduced by Geoff Johns very recently, about 2 to 3 years ago. And he was meant to talk about this idea in a book, a comic book he's called The Three Jokers. The problem with this is that the book has not been released.
I was going to be very sarcastic and say, do any of us believe this book is happening?
I mean, we keep seeing art from it. I don't know. I hope this book is released. I agree with you. But I'm going to talk about it right now. And then we are never going to mention it again.
Great.
Okay. So Geoff Johns is sort of introducing this idea that there are three Jokers in the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
There is the original Joker, the Golden Age Joker, the thief killer. There is the Silver Age Joker, which is the clown prince of crime, laughing fish, ha 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 gag.
My favorite Joker
copter. And then there is the killing joke Joker, the homicidal sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And those are the three Jokers. Now, we do not know if his theory posits that there are three different men.
Mm-hmm.
We do not know if there's this theory that they change. I kind of like the Grant Morrison theory about the Joker, which is in his famous Batman run, he did this idea that the Joker's personality, because his brain is so insane, everything like that,
mm-hmm.
he kind of rewrites his personality every so often.
That's cool.
Depending on the external stimuli. That's why in the Grant Morrison run, we see the Joker as two different people, basically, mm-hmm. because he has rewritten his own brain. And to be honest with you, I like that theory because it kind of couches every different version of the Joker into that theory where we're like, oh, the Joker is acting different. Well, it's because this week his brain has rewritten himself. He's so insane that his brain has basically given himself a brand new reboot.
And Grant Morrison is a fan of everything is in canon, everything yep. is included, everything is valuable,
mm-hmm.
Which is something that we really like here on the yep. podcast.
So there
well.
You go. That's the three Jokers.
Don't ask us about it again.
That is it. I just wanted to, I knew a fan of ours or listeners as would probably call us on it if we didn't talk about it. The book's not out, so we don't really know what he's going to do. As far as I can tell, those are the three Jokers. That's it. As far as I'm concerned, this is one dude.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cool.
Ashley, do you have something you want to bring up or
no.
anything? Okay. You were just holding up your phone like you were going to make a note or an astute observation.
No, I was Googling when Batman 89 came out.
Okay. June 19th.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, cool. All right, so.
You're welcome.
Bill Finger is the unsung hero of Batman comics. He mm-hmm. is sort of this ghostwriter that Bob Kane brought in to work with him on Batman. And Bill Finger is actually the creative genius that we have to owe for many of the things that we love about Batman.
Including his costume design. Google.
Yep.
I will share it. I've shared it before. Google Bob Kane's Batman yep. design.
Yeah, it is Bill Finger. Bill Finger is classically the one that is credited for the Joker. Bill Finger is classically the person who also came up with the Batcave.
The Bat symbol is his idea.
The Batmobile. And Ashley, your favorite.
Robin.
Mr. Robin.
Yes.
Comes from Bill Finger. But Bill Finger did a drawing of the Joker that was inspired by Conrad Veidt in The Man Who Laughs in 1928. It's a very famous picture that many of you have seen. Ashley, I think we should definitely share it on our social media so everybody can see it. It also, he's inspired by the classic Joker playing card from a bicycle deck. Now, visually, this character basically looks the way he looks now in the 1930s. Now, Jerry Robinson, who was hired by Bob Kane as an editor at the age of 17, stated in The Amazing World of DC Comics in 1975 that the Joker was always intended to serve as a Moriarty to Batman's Sherlock Holmes, describing him as diabolical but clownish. And I quote, this is what Jerry Robinson says, "I wanted somebody visually exciting. I wanted somebody that would make an indelible impression, would be bizarre, would be memorable like the Hunchback of Notre Dame or any other villains that had unique physical characters." He told Finger about his concept by telephone, later providing sketches of the character and images that would become his iconic Joker playing card design. So Robinson kind of like tweaked the Finger concept.
Which is why he gets a creator credit on this compared to some of the other characters that came out around the same time.
Now, Jerry Robinson is a great creator. He is no longer with us.
Mm-hmm. Not related to me.
Ashley.
Yes.
I've met Jerry Robinson and I talked to him.
What?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes, Ashley does not know this. In 2008 was the first time that I ever went to San Diego Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the DC booth, and who would be signing there but Jerry Robinson?
Holy. expletive.
And he was signing prints of the first image of the Joker.
Uh-huh.
I have it.
What?
I don't know where it is. I'm going to be fully honest.
Oh, I was like, we should dig it out.
I do not know where it is.
But it is somewhere.
But it is somewhere in my apartment. But I got to meet with him. He was so nice. And he was,
he was very old.
Yes, he was very, very old. But it was one of those things where when I went to the DC booth for the very first time, I got to meet three people that for some reason nobody had they didn't have lines for. So mm-hmm. like I was able to like hop in and talk to all of them. Those three people were Grant Morrison, Geoff Johns, and then Jerry Robinson.
Speaking of Geoff Johns.
So like to me, getting to talk to the guy who had a part in creating the Joker was pretty astounding.
And was quite young at the time as well.
Yeah.
Like, I love the note that he started when he was 17, because to me that explains a lot about the Joker.
Yep.
And can you imagine being 17 and being like, we're making Batman. This is what is happening.
So I'm certain I have this print signed by Jerry Robinson mm-hmm. somewhere in like one of my long boxes. I would literally have to take apart my entire apartment
home
to find
yeah.
it. Yeah. I guarantee you I didn't throw it. I guarantee you I stuck it in some bag or board.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
where
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
So anyways, so the Joker's origin, just like in the fictional version where it's all over the place and nobody knows what it is actually debated in the real world, too, by the three different creators. Robinson takes credit for having a deck of playing cards always on hand. Bill Finger claims that he produced the sketch before the deck of cards came out. And then Bob Kane in 1994 said, and I quote, Bill Finger and I created the Joker. Bill was the writer. Jerry Robinson came to me with a playing card of the Joker. That's the way I summed it up. The Joker looks like Conrad Veidt, you know, the actor from The Man Who Laughs. Bill Finger had a book with a photograph of Conrad Veidt and showed it to me and just said, here's the Joker. Jerry Robinson had absolutely nothing to do it, but he'll always say that he created it till he dies. He brought in a playing card, which he used for a couple of issues, the Joker as his playing card. So there is a fight about who created the Joker. Kids, I'm also going to give you this. Bob Kane did help create Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But when you dig into some of the research about Mr. Kane, and hey, he had a more successful career than I will ever have, but that man, when you get into some of his interviews about his co-creators, becomes very problematic.
Yeah, it seems like if you worked with Bob Kane, he will take credit for everything
yep.
that you did.
Bill Finger in 1966 even gave his own account, saying, I got a call from Bob Kane. He had a new villain. When I arrived, he was holding a playing card. Apparently, Jerry Robinson or Bob, I don't recall who, looked at the card. They had an idea for the character, and they said, the Joker. Bob made a rough sketch of it. At first, it didn't look like a Joker. It looked more like a clown. And I remembered the Grosset and Dunlap formerly issued very cheap editions of the classics by Andrew Dumas and Victor Hugo. And the volume I had was The Man Who Laughs. His face had been permanently operated on so that he would always have a grin, and it looked absolutely weird. I cut the picture out of the book, gave it to Bob, who drew the profile, gave it a more sinister aspect. He worked on the face. I worked on the white face, the red lips, the green hair. And then suddenly we had the Joker.
I love the idea that he went to an Alexandre Dumas book and like cut it up and was like, this picture.
Yes.
I think that's very funny.
Now, the Joker is credited with being Batman's first supervillain, although Batman also fights with the cat in Batman number one at the same time. So it is a slight argument about who is the first supervillain, Catwoman or Joker. But I like that Catwoman and Joker have the closest relationships in modern day to Batman, as they are essentially his first villains.
Yeah, they're like indelibly tied to him.
In his first appearance, he's portrayed as a remorseless serial killer committing murder with not with Joker venom, but more that he gives them a rictus grin. Have you ever read Batman number one?
I have.
Okay, it's the idea that he goes in the radio and the Joker says, I will kill this person by midnight.
Yeah.
Ha 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 ha. And he gives them a rictus grin. So that's the idea. The original plan for the Joker was to be killed in his second appearance after Batman stabs him in the heart because Bill Finger didn't want Batman to have villains who kept escaping and coming back for fear it would make him look like an inept hero, which is very early, an amazing observation for something that we talk about Batman nowadays.
And it is a big, you know, it's a big part of Batman's identity now, to the point where even Jason Todd points it out where he comes back to life. It does make him look like Well, you're not very good at your job, are you?
Yeah.
So well done, Bill Finger.
Now, editor Whitney Ellsworth overruled Finger, and the Joker went on to appear in 9 of Batman's next 12 issues. And over the course of the Golden and Silver Age, the Joker emerged as the arch enemy of Batman and Robin, racking up a body count of the dozens of people in just a few years into his stay. Now, Ashley, just in case anybody doesn't know, what is the Gold Age of comics? What is the Silver Age of comics?
So the Golden Age of comics is from the time of Action Comics number 1, which is 1938. I couldn't remember if it was 8 or 9. 1938 until Flash of Two Worlds. Flash of Two Worlds is considered the beginning of the Silver Age of comics, which is...
Showcase 16?
Yes, mostly the 60s and 70s, just broad strokes. Yep. And then the Bronze Age begins in 80, in the 1980s.
I think it's earlier than that, but...
I think it's the late 70s?
Yeah, I think it's like mid-70s.
I think of it as being the Frank Miller stuff from the 80s. Anyway, the Bronze Age is late 70s, 80s, early 90s, when comics kind of got real hardcore. And then the modern age of comics arguably begins in the mid-90s.
Yeah, so I just wanted to give everybody a quick catch-up, just in case you didn't know.
Yeah.
Now, at the beginning of the Silver Age, artist Dick Sprang took over, and DC Comics moved their marketing towards children and away from gritty crime stories. This led to the emergence of the Joker as a prankster, very famously known as for Joker Fist and the giant... I love the Joker copter. I don't know if you know about the Joker copter.
Oh, I do.
The helicopter with the giant Joker face in the beginning. It's really good.
I do think the Joker fish are like... all-time greatest Joker moments.
Now, another part of this reason is for the silly fine of the Joker was the establishment of the Comics Code Authority in 1954, which banned, among other things, gore, innuendo, and excessive violence, which was basically the entire deal of the Joker. So when the Silver Age came around, most of the original Batman villains kind of passed into obscurity as new villains were introduced, and Batman started actually taking a more active role in the Justice Society and the Justice League. We talked about this in our Penguin episode. The Penguin basically disappears for almost 20 years. Two-Face is the same thing.
Yeah.
But the Joker...
And Catwoman.
Yeah.
They sustain.
They sustain, which is very, very interesting. Now, we talked... We're going to talk about his origin story here. Joker has an origin story. Now, there is a little bit of kerfuffle in the comic books industry here. There have been creators that have tried to give Joker an origin story. There have been creators that say the Joker does not have an origin story. There are creators that say the Joker should never have an origin story. In fact, there is a very famous, and we've talked about it on this show before, that the reason why Steve Ditko left The Amazing Spider-Man was that Stan Lee wanted to introduce the Green Goblin as Norman Osborn. Spoilers. For a comic that came out in 1966.
And for like every single Spider-Man movie.
And Steve Ditko didn't like that because Steve Ditko wanted the Green Goblin to have the mysterious origin of the Joker. So Ashley, we're going to talk about this.
Yeah.
Should the Joker have an origin story or should he just be mysterious? Now, I got to say this. We have two movies that play on different opposite coins of this. Batman 1989, the Tim Burton movie.
Yes.
Gives a Joker origin story.
Yes.
The Dark Knight,
yes.
2008, Christopher Nolan film. Never.
Multiple origin stories.
Multiple origin stories. The Joker lies. What's your preference?
No origin story.
Okay, why?
I like the Joker as a monster.
Okay.
Don't want
like a
reason to empathize with him.
Mm-hmm.
I do acknowledge that something like The Killing Joke, for example, is one of the best Joker stories ever told.
I still don't think that's an origin. I don't.
It is luminary. And I think that it is very interesting, but I think the Joker is more compelling and more interesting and ultimately more dangerous when we don't know. And I just really hate, I have no reason for it. It's just, again, not to my taste. I hate the idea that like the Joker is involved in the death of Bruce Wayne's parents. I
will argue for a movie. I think that's a great choice, though.
Sure.
Because it simplifies things.
Sure, yeah.
I agree with you. The Joker should not murder Bruce Wayne's parents.
But I don't like that.
I understand why they did that for the movie.
Yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. And for like an audience who's less familiar mm-hmm. with the subject matter, it makes it more of a closed loop. I understand that. I don't like it. But I've read a lot of the subsequent Joker origin stories. And for me, it's diminishing returns. And I love an origin story,
yeah.
As I've said. So it is my preference that the Joker remain shrouded in mystery. I think he's creepier that way. And every single time they announce that we're finally going to learn the real Joker, I just roll my eyes.
Yeah.
It's just not something I'm interested in.
Sure.
If people who are listening are really interested in this, if they think that Three Jokers is going to be the coolest thing that's ever happened, that's awesome. It's just my opinion.
Well, the reason I brought this up is that in 1971, Bill Finger wrote the first of what would become hundreds of Joker origin stories in Detective Comics number 168.
Thanks, Bill Finger.
Now, the reason why we're bringing up this origin is because this is the first time there was the appearance of the Joker being part of the Red Hood gang
mm-hmm.
and falling into a vat of chemicals, which becomes later Staples. In 1964, we're going to back up a little bit for the origin story. Julius Schwartz took over editing duties on Batman because he didn't like the Joker. So the character appeared frequently less until 1966 when the Batman television debuted and the Joker rocketed to popularity. Fun fact, if you read the Batman comics that were released beginning 3 months after Batman began airing in January 1966, the tone of the comics and the characters begin to reflect their on-screen counterparts. Notably, Cesar Romero's Joker basically became the comic book Joker.
Yeah, and I think that's why they went back to do an origin story later, was because the character became so popular again.
Yeah.
Because Cesar Romero's great.
When the show, Batman TV show, ended in 1968, comic sales declined pretty sharply, and Carmine Infantino, who was the DC editorial director at the time, turned away from kid-friendly content, and under his guidance, the Joker brought on some of the more brutal toys and brutal murdering aspects towards the end of the Silver Age, including lethal hand buzzers, acid-squirting flowers, trick guns, and elaborate deadly crimes. And after only 1 year, the Joker disappeared from comic books starting in 1969 for 4 years until he was brought back in Batman number 251, which is called The Joker's Five-Way Revenge, by famous Batman team Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams. Now, in this story, he was presented as he was originally, a homicidal maniac who could match wits blow for blow with Batman. Now, he doesn't appear very much in the story, but he does appear like a Moriarty, a master of spiders pulling all the strings in the background, just like he was originally intended by Jerry Robinson. Denny O'Neil said his idea was, and I quote, "Simply to take it back to where it started, I went to the DC library and read some of the early stories. I tried to get a sense of what Kane and Finger were after." Now, if you've ever seen Denny O'Neil in a documentary, I'm just going to say that's a not half bad
that's
impression
pretty good, yeah.
of Denny O'Neil. It was later during the Denny O'Neil run where the Joker was declared legally insane and first sent to Arkham Asylum in 1974. Fun fact, it was first called Arkham Hospital. Now, Ashley,
mm-hmm.
Were you going to say something? Were you asking something about Arkham Hospital?
I think the idea of Arkham Hospital versus Arkham Asylum, I think that's such a neat detail because hospital and asylum have very different connotations. Arkham Asylum is the alliteration is nicer.
Yes.
It sounds scarier. But the idea that it was a hospital, it was originally a place of healing.
Yeah.
I think is interesting food for thought.
Now, Ashley, let's talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
How crazy do you think the Joker is?
Oh, man.
Like, is he bonkers crazy? Is he fooling us? Because I would make the argument that in The Dark Knight, he's not really insane.
I don't think he's crazy.
Okay.
I don't think he's like clinically insane.
Okay.
In the way, to me, is the Joker actually crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Is definitely up for interpretation, and you can cite multiple stories and multiple sources to prove your opinion.
Well, what's your preferred,
either way.
Would be the question.
I think it's a question that's like, do you like it better if Hamlet is actually insane?
Mm-hmm.
I like it better if the Joker is not clinically insane.
Oh, so he's a calculating madman.
I do. And this is something that I've come around to more in my adult life. And I'm going to make a comparison that's rather dark, but please go with me on this.
Where are we going? I don't know.
Some of the scariest people in real life criminals who are murderers or mass shooters are not clinically insane. Mm-hmm. They're not the healthiest people mentally, but they're not out of their gourds. They're not crazy, drooling, hallucinatory. Some of them are. But like a figure like Ted Bundy is very smart and very sane. And I think the Joker is scarier if he's very smart and very sane and that he uses the guise to get away with what he gets away with. Mm. I think that's more interesting. And I think he likes being in Arkham Asylum because I think he gets three squares a day and gets to have a nap for a while. Honestly. <Yeah. laughs> Do you prefer him to be clinically insane?
I think he is clinically insane.
Yeah.
I think that works best for the story if Joker is bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
Because Batman's so controlled.
Mm-hmm. And restrained.
So the opposite of that needs to be beyond bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Joker's calculated, then he's just Batman.
I just think he's too smart to be insane.
Well, you can be smart and be insane. And you can also like have brief.
You're thinking of like John Nash?
Well, it's also, yeah, there's people like that can come into moments of brilliance,
yes,
and then go, I'm going to eat a banana and bleach sandwich.
You're thinking of Walter Bishop.
I really think he's bonkers because to me, again, I've always thought of the Joker as the guy of like, if you walked into an alley with him, it would be the scariest moment of your life because you don't know what he's going to do. He might shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
He might skin you alive. He might eat your foot off. He might just cut off his own hand and be like, and then walk away,
mm-hmm,
and not even touch you. You don't know. And that's the other thing about like, that's why there's great animated series, Batman the Animated Series. We'll talk about that a little bit later, called Joker's Favor,
mm-hmm,
where he catches the guy on the freeway and, mm-hmm, and he owns that guy's life. That's why that episode is so scary, because that guy doesn't know what the Joker's going to do to him. And that's the thing too, is like, to me, the Joker would be the one henchman in Gotham that no henchman would work for, because you never know if the Joker's just going to murder you,
mm-hmm,
for the hell of it.
I just think in my favorite Joker moments, he's way too calculating to be like non-functionally insane.
Sure. But I think that you can have both worlds.
Absolutely.
Where he's like, for a couple days he's calculated, mm-hmm, but then for Wednesday he's just like, I'm gonna stab walls.
Yeah, you know, because you point out like in the Dark Knight, but even like something like the Dark Knight Returns.
Mm-hmm.
That's a person very much in control of everything they're doing.
Oh, see, I disagree.
Oh, I think he's very. I think that whole thing is a plan.
No, I disagree. I think he is all like, that's catatonic Joker, and that's Joker at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Joker, like he is so far gone.
In many ways, I think he's like a pure id, right? Like he's pure, mm-hmm, impulse.
Well, to me, I look at the Dark Knight Returns Joker as the Joker that has no energy.
Mm-hmm.
He's like very old.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. I believe we're going to talk about it a little bit as well as we get there. Okay. So, fun fact.
Okay.
1975.
Yes.
The Joker,
yes,
gets his own comic book series. He becomes the first comic book villain to get his own solo series.
Of course he does.
The Joker was written by Denny O'Neil and dealt with his interactions with other Batman rogues, although he never actually faced off with Batman during the series. Fun fact, because the Comics Code Authority demanded that villains must be punished in comic stories, the Joker did have to be reprimanded by the end of each issue, and this is what is considered to be the fact that why this Joker series was canceled only after 9 issues. I also just think because you can't have a villain sustain a solo series.
I agree with you. I think it's really funny that his first solo series was a flop.
In fact, this series was never collected, and it's only been reprinted in trade in 2013. The original issues are actually highly priced collector's items. So if you have a Joker in your back pocket,
slab it.
Put it on eBay.
Slab worthy.
Put it on eBay. This time, comics also saw editor Jeanette Kahn join the Batman team, who put Steve Englehart and Marshall Roberts on Detective Comics number 471 through 476, and created probably what is considered to be one of the most visually iconic Joker moments of all time. We alluded to it before. The Laughing Fish issue, which, Ashley, I think is your favorite Joker image of all time.
It is, yeah. I think it's an all-time great Batman cover, but it's just... For me, it's a perfect, it perfectly exemplifies who the Joker is, what he's all about, And I think it's a great example of what comics are at their best, because comics can be really thoughtful and really dark and really intense and really dramatic, but it can also be very silly. Mm-hmm. And I think it is just a perfect balance of those things. I love that cover.
And I think everybody should actually read that story. I don't want to talk about it, but it all comes down to Joker fighting a copyright.
Yep.
I believe it's collected in the Best Joker Stories hardcover that came out very recently. Which
it's also in the Joker 75 celebration.
That's the one I meant.
Oh, okay.
That's what I meant, which was a little sneak peek to our recommended reading, everybody.
Hey.
Then we come to a little storyline called Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Hey, imagine that.
What's that, Ashley?
There were so many universes. DC said, we only want one universe. So the Anti-Monitor ate them all and pooped out. One universe. If you want to actually know what it's about, go to Patreon and check out Crisis Club, where we're doing a 12-part documentary series about what Crisis on Infinite Earths is actually about.
But what's our Patreon?
Patreon.com/Jawin. Jawin.
Thank you.
Also go. In the show notes.
I also think if you've been playing around with the Geek History Lesson bingo card, I think you just got to mark a square right there.
I think you did.
So, yeah. And I'll give you another square here. Mark down your square. There you go. All right. So right after Crisis on Infinite Earths, we're in a brand new universe, but a storyline came out the exact same year as Crisis on Infinite Earths called The Dark Knight Returns in 1986. It's about a 55-year-old Bruce Wayne who's in the future. He hasn't been Batman for a while, but he decides to become Batman again and punch crime in its stupid face. And we learn in that story that the Joker is catatonic and he wakes up only after Batman appears, because this is the first storyline to really introduce the idea that the Joker is in love with Batman.
I'm gonna glad we're having this discussion.
If it happened before this storyline, listeners, please tell me. But as far as I know, this is the first story, and it's kind of been picked up by modern comic mm-hmm. books, that this is the story where Joker loves Batman. And of course, spoilers for this story, it eventually leads to a confrontation in a carnival in a tunnel of love mm-hmm. ride, where Batman beats Joker to holy living hell and has him to the edge of death. And he has cracked the Joker's neck so much that the Joker is paralyzed, but he's not dead. And the Joker gets after Batman for not killing him. And then the Joker snaps his own neck, killing himself, so that Batman will be blamed for the murder. Which to me, I think is probably almost the most jokery mm-hmm. Joker moment, because it's like the ultimate joke that Batman will be charged with the crime
Batman
of the Joker's
whose
murder.
Code and whose life.
Yeah.
And this, of course, predates the Jason Todd resurrection.
Yes.
But like who lets so many other people get hurt because he won't kill people will ultimately be blamed for the death. It's a huge punch.
I love that moment. I think it's such a great, to me, that is the ending of Batman and Joker. Mm-hmm. It's so perfect. Now, Ashley, you said you want to talk about a little bit of this. Do we want to talk about the idea? Is the Joker
yeah.
in love with Batman?
Yeah. What's okay. your headcanon?
Yes.
I 100%
yes.
think so.
I want to hear your thoughts about this, especially as a woman looking at this relationship of two non-romantic men.
Yes.
That sort of understand each other better than anybody else will.
Right. We've talked about this on a number of podcasts, because that is a theme that I really like.
Yeah.
Two characters who understand each other better than anyone else in the world. And it doesn't always have to be romantic. Sometimes it is.
Sure.
It's romantic in Brokeback Mountain. It's not romantic in Justified. But I think that makes for a very compelling story. I was first really confronted with this idea in a review that I actually read of The Dark Knight.
Oh, the movie.
In the Globe and Mail, which is a Toronto-based newspaper. And the person who wrote it must have been a comic book nerd, because they were like, we're finally getting the Joker who's in love with Batman. And they talked about the interrogation scene. And being a teenager, that like blew my mind. I thought that was incredible. And I think that reading of it for me is the only way that the Joker makes sense, because why wouldn't the Joker just move on to messing with literally anyone else?
Well, it's the idea of like, why wouldn't the Joker just kill Batman?
Yeah. And why does he fixate on Batman?
And it's the idea like, if he kills,
why doesn't he just kill all the Robins?
Yes. It's the
idea. And Alfred.
Exactly. But it's the idea that if he does that, then the fun stops.
Yeah. Like, you know? So to me, the Joker is I mean, in many ways, and I don't mean to politicize this. This has nothing to do with the movies. Please don't take it that way. He's kind of the ultimate example of a young man who can't take no for an answer, like when you're a teenager, mm-hmm. And who keeps coming back. Because we've seen movies where if you just keep coming back, the girl will go out with you eventually. She'll realize. And like
Batman's the girl in this analogy.
Yeah,
I love this.
And that's who the Joker is. The Joker is like the perfect example of a toxic relationship. But because Batman won't kill him, they're just going to do this dance forever. Would you want to go answer the door, Jason?
No, there's somebody knocking on the door for you.
Oh, okay. Hang on. I'm walking up. Move, Brago. Oh, hi.
Hello, Batman. I have some flowers for you.
Batman's not here right
now. You're Batman. You're Batman. Hello. I know Batman when I see him. Hello, Batman. Batman, I've never heard you snort before. This is lovely. Hello, Batman.
Hello, Joker.
I'm excited to hear you talk, Batman. It's been days. I think we've broke the Batman, listeners.
Do you want to hear about my hockey pants?
I do. I have some flowers for you and some chocolates.
I don't like flowers. They remind me of my parents' funeral.
All right, I'll throw them on the ground. I'm stomping on them right now. I'm stomping on the flowers.
Thank you.
Yes, but I have some chocolate. I know you love milk chocolate.
No, only dark chocolate.
Well, there's dark chocolate. It's half milk chocolate, half dark
only
chocolate.
Only dark chocolate.
Give the milk.
Where's the dark chocolate?
Oh, my God.
Where is it?
Batman, just give the milk chocolate to the Robins. You have 50 of them now.
I've
only killed one, so I know you have at least 49, Batman. So I've picked a movie out. We're going to go to the movie. I might hold your hand. The movie is His Girl Friday.
Oh, that's...
Okay, the movie is...
That's more of a... Clark Kent, Superman movie.
The movie is The Mark of Zorro.
What?
Huh?
No!
I don't get it. What's the problem with this movie? I don't know. Why are you crying? Oh my God, this is so much work. You know what? When my personality changes, I'll come back tomorrow. Maybe you'll get a more romantic Joker, but this current Joker just can't deal with this, okay? I gotta go.
Bye.
Click.
Click.
It was a
the
close.
Door clicks closed.
Why are you making fun of me, Batman? Ka-chunk. Then.
Okay, this is better.
Listeners, watching Ashley's face as she realized I was going to make her do a Batman impression, I completely broke her. I don't think she expected that. That was fun.
That's like two different squares on the bingo card.
If you want to have more of Ashley's Batman impression, please email us at geekishlesson@gmail.com. Speaking of things that have nothing to do with email, we're going to talk about a 1988 story called A Death in the Family.
It's a good story.
Very famous Joker story.
It has an Ayatollah in it.
Yeah, because it basically takes place in a fictional country that's beside Iran.
Yes, not Iran.
Yes. So, fun fact, Ashley, the Joker was appointed as Iran's ambassador to the United Nations because politics at the time with Iran were quite contentious, and I think Batman writers were like, this'll be fun.
Yeah, so I really like Death in the Family. We've recommended it, talked about it many times on this podcast. That's a really problematic.
Yep, it's very weird. It's very weird. So this is the story, of course, where Jason Todd and his mother track the Joker across the Middle East, and they eventually end up in Iran, in a fictional country. And the Joker kills Jason Todd with a crowbar. He beats him to death. And because he's the ambassador to the United Nations, he gets diplomatic immunity from the crime. This, of course, was done by a phone-in call. Mm-hmm. Like, people, comic fans, got to call in a number for yes to kill Jason Todd and call in a number for no to kill Jason Todd. You can even find the page where Jason Todd doesn't die. They drew both pages in case.
Jason Todd only died because of a robocaller, and it was not a landslide.
Yeah, I've heard it was only by 80 votes, like somewhere around 80 votes that they decided to kill Jason.
Ultimately, for the best, though, I will say, in the macrocosmic view of Batman universe.
This is a storyline that changes the Joker and changes Batman for the rest. We're still feeling the effects of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's interesting. I think the Joker killing a Robin is very interesting. It makes the Joker dangerous.
Because I believe this is the first time he kills a member of the Bat, or seriously injures a member of the Bat family, right?
Yes, because he's going to seriously injure a member of the Batman family in 1988.
Oh, mere years later.
As we get to same year. Alan Moore and Brian Bolland's original graphic novel, The Killing Joke. Now, this is sort of expands on one of the Joker's origins, this is the first time it introduced the narrative of a failed stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. Many fans believe that this is the Joker's definite origin. You can see that the current Joker movie is definitely taking a lot mm-hmm. of things from The Killing Joke.
This is also, The Killing Joke, my favorite fact about The Killing Joke. Mm-hmm. When you buy a modern copy, there's a quote on the front from Tim Burton where he says, "This is my favorite comic book." Mm-hmm. If you look at interviews with Tim Burton before the Batman movie was made, he states unequivocally he would never waste his time reading comic books.
Yes.
So I just find that ironic.
Yes. Now, in the storyline, the present day, Joker maims another member of the Batman family by shooting Barbara Gordon in the spine, leaving her paralyzed. Another fact that is sort of hidden in this storyline.
Oh, what happens to Jim?
Is that the Joker and his crew basically rape Commissioner Gordon.
I don't think
Gordon.
There's a basically about that.
But that is something that is also forgotten in the storyline. We forget the effects that there's no follow-up for the Commissioner Gordon trauma either.
Right. No one examines that. We know that Gordon obviously has a more difficult relationship afterward, but like that could have been... And yep. I think it was also the time when it was, could have been really fertile ground for an interesting conversation, but he's a man and he's a police commissioner, so he kind of just grows his mustache a little longer and calls it a day.
Well, there's also this fun fact. Originally, when published, The Killing Joke was not meant to be part of continuity. Mm-hmm. And then later, John Ostrander, writing The Suicide Squad, wanted to introduce a new character as Oracle and introduce the paralyzed Barbara Gordon into the pages of Suicide Squad, confirming mm-hmm. that Killing Joke was now in continuity.
Well, as we've said before, Barbara Gordon is in her fully best form as Oracle. Mm-hmm. So I am glad for that. If people want to know more about that, Jason taught our Suicide Squad lesson a couple years ago.
Yes. Then we're going to move on into 1989. Grant Morrison's Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on a Serious Earth, explores the relationship psychosis shared by Batman, the Joker, and spinning out of some of these events. It's a great book. In 1989, we saw the Joker brought to life on the big screen by Jack Nicholson in Tim Burton's Batman that we have talked about on this. Jack Nicholson as the Joker kind of becomes the most indelible performance of the Joker in a long time. It's very interesting.
For like almost 20 years.
Yeah, like it's hard to even get away from him. Like mm-hmm. that, this is the Joker. I mean, he's a good Joker, and mm-hmm. and his look is great, and the way he acts
the look is
great.
Very scary.
He's very Jack Nicholson in the movie, but it's fine. And I will also say this: it's the first time that we ever get a name for the other Joker. He's called Jack Napier mm-hmm. in that movie, and I remember walking into comics and learning that that wasn't the case. It was a little weird to me, and that leads us into our action figure spotlight.
What?
I'll never remember that theme song.
Get a different theme song every time.
Okay, we have done this in a couple of the episodes, and a lot of people have liken about it. So I'm gonna always try to, if I can tie in an action figure or a toy or a statue into this thing, I will. So the Joker toy that I remember the most comes from a series of action figures called the Dark Knight Collection, released in 1990. It was the year after the Batman movie. And I actually had this action figure. It was released in 1990. It's called Sky Escape Joker.
Oh, I know. You said I know exactly what this figure looks like.
Yep. It apparently originally retailed for $4.99, which just blows my mind. And it has the Joker. He's in the classic thing, but you can put a little helicopter whirly mm-hmm. thing in the back of his back. But the coolest thing about this action figure is that if you put, I believe it was an ice cube on his face, he would turn... His face would turn skin colored, mm-hmm. so you could do the skin color gag from Batman 89, where he keep white. They did this thing in the Batman 89 movie where he would paint human skin over his white skin, so he could walk on the street and nobody would care.
Yeah.
So this allowed you as the action figure to do that. I will tell you, as somebody who owned this action figure, it worked about half the time.
Yeah, I had a lot of dolls and action figures as a young girl that were supposed to be able to do this gag, and they also just stopped working at a certain point.
Yeah. So Ashley will have a picture picture of the Sky Escape Joker on our Twitter, which is what, Ashley?
At GHL Podcast. I usually share the action figure spotlights on Saturdays.
Yes. Okay, so the 90s where we get to expand Joker's relationships and also make him dangerous at the same time. In 1992, the Batman the Animated Series introduces Harley Quinn, which I think changes the Joker forever.
Mm-hmm.
Batman the Animated Series also introduces Mark Hamill as the Joker, which is considered to this day to probably be the most iconic portrayal of the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Then when Night Quest happens, where Batman is replaced by an eviler Batman, John Paul Valley.
Who Jason loves.
Who I really like. It's a big mechanized 90s Batman suit. The Joker is one of the few people that figures out that Batman is not his
boyfriend.
Is not his boyfriend. It takes until 1999 and the No Man's Land story arc for Harley Quinn to be introduced into the comic books.
I love No Man's
Land. Ashley.
Yeah.
What do you think is... explain No Man's Land for everybody.
No Man's Land is basically Gotham suffers a horrible earthquake and it kind of like falls into the ground and chaos ensues. And so the United States says, screw you, we're going home. Barricades it in, declares martial law and says, good luck, dudes. And so the GCPD kind of starts a gang working with the Bat family. And there's like a Joker gang and a Riddler gang. And
it's very much what happens in The Dark Knight Rises.
A soft version of it.
These people are trapped in this island of Gotham for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
The Joker's one of those gangs. So Harley's introduced in that thing. And the conclusion of the No Man's Land storyline is that the Joker kills Jim Gordon's second wife, Sarah Essen, by tossing a baby at her, forcing her to catch it. And while she's about to catch the baby, he shoots her.
Yeah, it's really sad. Also, Cassandra Cain is introducing this event.
Yes, I brought that storyline up several times because to me, when I think about the most brutal Joker moments, that's even more so than Jason Todd, like that throwing the baby is like, to me, like, that's a dirty trick.
It shows you how good Sarah is because, like we talked about very early on in our Jim Gordon episode, the way Jim and Sarah get together is not the most above board. It's arguably not the most ethical, but they really, really care about each other. And No Man's Land actually really helps you and then helps Barbara to understand why their relationship is a good relationship. And then to kill her like that is really like, I just want Jim Gordon to be happy.
Yeah.
And
well, you know, Sarah was introduced in the Batman Year One storyline, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's the lady that he cheats on on his original wife, Barbara.
Which is not a lovely thing to do.
No.
But they're good together, and then she's trying to save his baby, so she's a good person.
The great thing about Sarah is that she was also a good cop.
Yes.
Yeah. And she's kind of been forgotten when I think she's a great character. Okay, so we're going to get to The Dark Knight, but I want to talk about a storyline that happens before The Dark Knight. Ashley, there's a great Batman series out there, one of the greatest Batman series of all time, and Batman's barely in it, and it's called Gotham Central.
Oh, so good.
Ashley, what is Gotham Central?
Gotham Central is what if we told the story of the GCPD and their contentious relationship with Batman and what it's like to be a cop in Batman. It alternates between the day shift and the night shift.
Yes. So, there is one of the best Joker storylines of all time is in Gotham Central.
Also a great Mr. Freeze story.
Yes, it's the first arc.
Mm-hmm.
This arc happens in the teens of Gotham Central. It's called Soft Targets.
Mm-hmm.
Joker begins a shooting spree with a high-powered sniper rifle where he murders Mayor Dickinson and the superintendent of Gotham City, which forces many people to not go outside during the busy Christmas holiday. He then eventually turns himself into the Gotham Major Crimes Unit, revealing that he's planted a bomb throughout the city in a famous department store during the Christmas shopping season as his Christmas present for Batman, which causes the MCU to rush to save countless Christmas shoppers from different malls from death. Joker then...
You mean the GCPD?
Oh, yes, that's
you
what I meant.
You said the MCU.
My apologies. It would be the GCU. No, I did mean the MCU as Major Crimes Unit.
Oh, okay, sorry.
My bad.
It's my bad.
It's a lot of anagrams.
Ooh.
So he then begins a shooting spree in the Major Crime Unit where he kills several detectives only to be shot by multiple times by Maggie Sawyer, who at this time was working in Gotham, as his bomb goes off in the now evacuated Toy Story, which has the Joker laughing in this hospital as the Christmas bells ring. It's a very
if you want to feel warm this holiday season.
It's a very interesting story to bring Joker into the modern world. So in 2008, we have Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight. Heath Ledger's, of course, portrayal of Joker. It's funny because at the beginning, Heath Ledger was not a popular casting choice, but actually wound up winning the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor posthumously for his Joker performance. Where do you fall on the Heath Ledger Joker performance?
I think it's great. I'm so goddamn sick of that version of the Joker.
You're sick of people, Ashley, just constantly talking like the Joker.
I'm sick of people dressing up like it. I'm sick of...
Let me show you a magic trick.
Which was a great moment the first time we saw it.
Yes.
I'm sick of this the way I'm sick of Deadpool cosplayers. People dress up like Deadpool and they dress up like this particular version of the Joker and they use it as an excuse to act like a-holes, to act like jerks,
yes,
publicly because I am this character. You're not. You're a dude in a costume in a public space. Act like a freaking grown-up.
Mm-hmm.
But the performance is incredible. It changed this character forever. His look is adopted in the Brian Azzarello Joker story. There's like the messy Joker came into vogue in a way that, and we've kind of switched back to a cleaner Joker look in the comics now. I think it's important for this character, but I also think it's important in, you know, cinema history. Like, it's an all-time great performance.
Yes. Okay, so now we're going to get to the new 52. Ashley, what's the new 52?
So, remember when DC had too many universes and they made one universe? Now they had too many things going on and they said, well, we're going to have Barry Allen run back in time because he misses his mommy. Everyone's only going to have been a superhero for 5 years except Batman and have more lines on their costumes.
Now, the New 52 introduces in one of its very first issues, Detective Comics number one in 2011, where this character basically chopped off, skinned the Joker's face off in issue one.
Mm-hmm.
And the Joker then goes around for like the next 4 to 5 years with this stapled, decaying piece of skin on his face, which makes the Joker like more of a disgusting monster. It's a version of the Joker that I really dislike.
Mm-hmm.
So this Joker storyline, this faceless, weird Joker, really explores the symbiotic relationship between the Joker and Batman, and it looks to Joker working to drive a wedge between Bruce and the adopted family he has around him. Joker shows back up in Gotham, and with the help of Harley Quinn, he kidnaps Batgirl, Catwoman, Robin, who's Damian, Nightwing, Red Robin, Tim Drake, and Red Hood, and locks them up in Arkham until Batman shows up. Now, the Joker sets up extensive booby traps for Batman to fight through, and in an attempt to placate the Joker, Batman indulges him by fighting through. The Joker ends up capturing Batman, presenting him with a table where all of his allies are strapped down and their faces are covered, and the Joker claims that he has skinned all of their faces off as the Dollmaker had done to them. Batman breaks free, no one is maimed, and he calls after the Joker that he has uncovered his true identity, but the Joker isn't hearing it, so he jumps off a cliff. This is also the storyline that introduces this idea that the Joker knows exactly who that Bruce Wayne is Batman, although they never confirm it. And it is also revealed in the storyline that the chemical that transferred Joker into the Joker is disonesium. Now, the reason why I'm having a hard time saying that is because it's a made-up element. This part of this storyline is something that I choose to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just got fell in some chemicals. I don't believe that he got in this super special dark metal chemical that turned his skin white and gave him superhero.
Yeah, and the reason that Jason is saying dark metal, and the reason I think that he included it in the notes is because Dionysium or whatever, the Diogenes Club, is ties into Dark Knight's metal and all of that stuff too.
Yes. So we're going to skip ahead a little bit until DC Rebirth happens, which is sort of the soft reboot of the DC Universe. And remember I just talked about Dionysium that was introduced in the New 52? Well, it turns out that that chemical is a pretty big plot point for the ending for a lot of the stuff that happens towards the end of the New 52. It's the Joker. He keeps cropping up. He's messing with those. He gets detained by Batman, Duke Thomas, and Hal Jordan. And the investigation of all this Dionysium stuff leads to the discovery of the Dark Multiverse, which is basically this weird version of the DC Multiverse where all your dreams and nightmares come from. This leads to the releasing of Barbatos, who is the evil demonic bat god representation of the anti-life equation that Grant Morrison introduced in his run, and the Dark Knights, who come from the Dark Knights metal storyline. And this actually leads us to where the Joker actually winds up teaming with Batman in order to defeat this new Batman, Dark Knight, the Batman Who Laughs. That Batman Who Laughs, I don't know if you know, is a version of Batman in another universe who became so crazed after the Jason Todd death that he got jacked with some Joker venom, mm-hmm. and became a Joker-like Batman. That is who the Batman Who Laughs. A lot of that is confusing. It might seem cosmically crazy. It's because it is. Yeah. But it eventually leads to the most current thing we're going to talk about is that right before their wedding, Catwoman and Batman were going to get married. Batman.
Jason was so happy.
Oh, yeah, they're perfect. Selina is Batman's Lois Lane. And the Joker sort of helps convince Catwoman that she shouldn't marry Batman, which is part of the reason that leads to her leaving him at the altar. Now, I have a little bit of a problem with this because I believe it's the storyline where Joker gets a wedding invitation to Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle's wedding, mm-hmm. but he understands that Batman and Catwoman are getting married. To me, it was never explained how the Joker knew that Batman and Catwoman were getting married, because it was the wedding of Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. So then it leans on like, oh, so he knows exactly who they are. That's, again, I have problems with that story.
Too convenient.
It's like, how does the Joker know?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that's where I'm going to leave it.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I think the lesson to take from this is that the Joker can be cosmic-y and confusing and towards the end. And that's kind of where the modern Joker is right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, he lacks definition by design, which can lead to some really great things. It can also lead to some nonsense.
Well, and I think it's also going to lead into a big part of our discussion in the Patreon episode, the Geekish Lesson Extra, where we do an extra 10 or 15 minutes on the subject, where we're going to talk about, should the Joker go away in his box and mm-hmm. not be used for a while? Is he overused? Because I think right now he is being overused, and it's leading to problems in his storylines, which we'll talk specifically about in the Patreon episode.
Yes, and that's a claim that we have asserted literally for years.
Yep. And that is it for the Joker. Before we move into our recommended reading, guys, where we recommend books about the Joker, I want to recommend a book that you might have heard of. I've talked about it on this podcast before. My book, Super Soldiers, A Salute to the Comic Book Heroes and Villains Who Fought for Their Country. Now, this is a book that is talking about comic book superheroes and supervillains that have served in the United States military. And if you don't know, I served in the U.S. military as well. And this talks about my military career and applying it to these heroes and these villains to determine whether or not they are good or bad soldiers. If you like comic books, I think you'll enjoy it. If you like this podcast, I think you'll enjoy it. But just to give you a little bit more of a taste, I don't know if you're watching this show that's on the air right now, Titans Season 2 of the DC Universe, this villain, Deathstroke's popped up on there, and I have a chapter about Deathstroke. And Ashley, if you don't mind, I thought I would read a little bit from the Deathstroke chapter. Give you a little taste of my book that's available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, right now. So here's from the chapter, Deathstroke, titled The Worst Military Dad. This is from Super Soldiers. We all have daddy issues. Now imagine if your father was in the military and he was a world-class mercenary. Also, let's add DC Comics supervillain to that list. Combine all those attributes into one person, and I guarantee he's a paternal figure most of us wouldn't be buying a Father's Day card for anytime soon. Well, all those descriptors are accurate of Slade Wilson, better known as Deathstroke the Terminator. The classic new Teen Titans villain with one eye can also be simply described as a real jerk. Slade is one of those characters in fiction who at every turn always makes the wrong decision. When it comes to fighting the Justice League or assassinating a rogue dictator, Slade will always make the right or most tactically sound choice. However, when it comes to his wife or children, Slade always chooses poorly, neglecting their feelings, neglecting their birthdays, and forgetting about them altogether in order to run outside the house and murder people. So as I wrote earlier in this paragraph, he's a real jerk. So that's a little taste from my book, Super Soldiers, currently available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Please go order it, and I should have signed copies available on my website soon, jasonimmon.com.
You can also, if you really need a signed copy, like right this second, and the website isn't up, if you email geekhistorylesson@gmail.com, we'll facilitate that for you.
Yeah, there you go. So there's a taste of my book. About another murderous person like the Joker. But speaking of the Joker, let's go into the recommended reading. Ashley, what's that?
That is where, if you have enjoyed this lesson and you want to read more about the Joker, we have curated a list for you. You go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. There's everything that we've recommended. You click on the widget. You buy it from Amazon at no extra cost to you. And a little bit of support comes back our way so that we can keep ourselves slathered in white makeup.
Yes, the first pick comes from Joker by Brian Azzarello. Now, this is a very interesting book. It's a more mature book, but it's also weirdly a book that Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo created right before The Dark Knight, and it's a Joker that's very similar to The Dark Knight, even though it has nothing to do with The Dark Knight.
I think this is the kind of book that a modern reader can really get into, and yep. I think if someone is excited for the new movie, this is a great book to check out.
Next is The Killing Joke by Alan Moore. You should read it just to see the storyline of the shooting of Barbara Gordon, and also to determine whether Grant Morrison's theory that the Joker, Batman kills the Joker in the final panel of the storyline is accurate or not.
Do you remember when that broke the internet?
I think he does. Anyways, the next one is Joker, A Celebration of 75 Years. Now, this is one of those great collections that DC Comics put out, which has basically a grab bag of all the eras of Joker. The Laughing Fish storyline is in that issue. So if you want to read it, it's not collected in very many places. And then the last thing is The Batman Who Laughs. Of course, it's the collection of the solo series of The Batman Laugh. Of course, got a solo series because it's the Joker, and talks about that weirdo Batman from the Dark Multiverse.
Yeah, if the weird cosmic confusing stuff sounded good to you, we got your back.
Yeah. Next, we're going to move into the honor roll. Ashley, what's that?
Well, you see, if you go over to Apple Podcasts, you leave us 5 stars, we'll read whatever you write. And I just want to say, we've only been pulling from the American Apple Podcast reviews because we're based in America.
Yes.
In case you didn't know. However, one of our lovely supporters, who we're actually going to read in a different episode,
in Canada,
left us a review, screenshotted it, and emailed it to geekhistorylisten@gmail.com. So if you are a non-American supporter and you leave us a review on your nation's iTunes
Apple Podcasts,
screenshot it, email it to us. We will include you in our honor roll because we appreciate you. We love you. We want to come do shows for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a way that we're trying to include more people and celebrate their support of us.
Look, we have a lot of listeners in Perth, Australia, and I expect one of you gentlemen or ladies
or NBs
or people.
Mm-hmm.
To get on it.
Yeah,
mate.
Show us your personality.
Yeah, let's do it. Nice pun.
Thank you. That's a RuPaul joke.
The first one comes from Captain Silly Pants, who said, "I've been meaning to write this review for ages, but kept being lazy and not doing it. But, .. I found out about this podcast from a friend about a year ago or so, and I've been going through the whole archive to catch up. I highly recommend doing that. I just listened to the Doctor Strange Show episode from 2017, and if I could put an emoji in here, it would be that mind explosion one, because it was so incredibly funny, and I loved getting a full episode of Steve-O and Clea. All the other normal episodes are wonderfully interesting and informative. My geekdom is more in the realm of novels and TV, so getting background or characters that I don't know a lot about and that show up in other places is awesome. Listening to the Elongated Man episode right after I finished this season of The Flash was especially poignant. We are really in the golden age of geek, and much thanks to Jason and Ashley for being guides along the way." Yeah, you're welcome.
That's so sweet.
The next one comes from Yuko Matt, who says, "First episode of GHL I heard was the Digimon one, and was a huge Digimon lover, and it was neat to see them go into the detail of the history of it. Since then, I've been hooked to the podcast." Thank you, Yuko Matt.
And sorry about all the mispronunciations.
Oh, yeah. And then finally, we come to Johnny Leals Me, who said, "Last year about this time, I discovered Geek History Lesson while searching Spotify for podcasts about the Fantastic Four. The two-part episode and bonus third part was exactly what I was craving."
Good job, Jason.
"I have been a longtime fan of Johnny Storm. I have wanted to be him since I was 7, and which is why I became an actor. I have read a ton of issues, but there is always more to learn about the first family. The podcast has been a blessing and inspiration to me as a writer as well." Oh, man, thank you. "After listening to every lesson and hearing and reading about Jupiter Jupiter Jet, I was so inspired to create my own web series with my wife about an original character named Nuke Nelson. Nuke Nelson's on YouTube. 4 episodes have been currently released at nukenelson.webseries on Instagram. Well done for the plug for yourself. I love it. Jason and Ashley, you keep me company while I have downtime on set, when I drive, and when I want to hear the FF episode for the 40th time. Thank you for everything you do for your fellow geeks. Face front, true believers, and flame on. P.S. Dr. Doom episode. I can't wait to hear Jason's impression of this. So this is from in the past. We've already done it, Johnny. So I hope you enjoy
it. Found it.
And the Doom impression changed in the episode.
Yes, it did. Be sure to go check out Nuke Nelson. That's great.
At nukenelson.webseries on Insta and Nuke Nelson on YouTube. All right, so Captain Silly Pants, UKO Matt, and Johnny Leals me. Welcome into the teacher's lounge. Over in the corner is a bowl of apples.
Oh, who brought that in?
Mr. Bullock.
What does Mr. Bullock teach?
Interrogation.
Marksmanship? Donut making?
Interrogation.
Well, he seems like a really sweet guy, so I hope he's good at the job.
Speaking of being good at our jobs, if you want to be good at your job, I suggest listening to more of our podcast on Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, all the places you can listen. Go over there, give us a rating, give us a review in all those places. As well, don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, and Ashley on Instagram and Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And also, you can find our podcast at geekishlesson.com for all the other episodes. Don't forget about our Patreon, patreon.com/Jawin. There's more stuff over there. Now we're at hashtag stick around. Ashley, what's your favorite Joker moment in Batman the Animated Series? I kind of revealed mine. Mine was the Joker's favor, especially when the guy looks in his rearview mirror and sees that the Joker is road raging him on the freeway.
There's a lot of really wonderful moments. There's also a lot of moments that by modern standards, you're like, this is mildly troubling.
Sure.
My favorite Joker episode is the Holiday Nights Christmas episode, which we did a dramatic reading of, I think, in our first year or our second
year. We did a dramatic reading of the Robin issue by Paul Dini, which is not the same thing.
No, but it's an adaptation of a similar story.
Not really.
No, he gets jacked by the Joker and the Joker drives him around.
Do they do that in the animated series too?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize they stole it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. It's much darker in the comic. Mm-hmm. I like any time we get to see the Joker using a holiday, even if it's a fake in-universe holiday, because I think the more absurd he goes in the show in particular, the more fun he is.
Well, the second episode of the Batman animated series ever is Christmas with the Joker.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah. So, there you go. All right. Thank you so much for sticking with our Joker-tastic episode of GHL. I have been Jason the Rhubarb King Inman.
I've been Ashley Victoria Robinson and Professor Joker. Hello. Hello.
Batman, I'm back. I have all kinds of flowers for you. I'm hoping that you got over whatever you went down yesterday.
I don't like flowers. They remind me of my parents.
All right, I'm going to throw them on the ground again. All right.
I just need you to do one thing for me.
Okay, what's that?
Please, dismiss the class.
It's just me and you in this doorway, Batman.
Just dismiss the class. Then we can kiss.
Oh, I am in a rock and a hard place here because I actually think what Batman's saying to me is insane. And that's a first for me. But I do want that kiss. Oh, Joker. What do I do? What would Harley do? Harley would hit him with a hammer. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pull out the giant hammer. Whack!
Oh.
Class is dismissed. The bat's dismissed.